Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Yelton, we have a podcast.
Diving deep into all things Texas.
Both on and off the field.
Here's Sean Pendergast.
Welcome
to Utopia.
Hey, everybody, welcome in. It is a Tuesday mailbag edition of the Utopia Football Podcast. I am Sean Pendergast, one half of Payne and Pendergast on Sports Radio 610. Great to be with you. Appreciate everybody tuning in. Appreciate everybody subscribing, rating, and reviewing the podcast. Get the administrative stuff out of the way. Hit the subscribe button. We've got a lot to get to. The Lions come into town on Sunday. We've got a mailbag to get to as well. The mailbag is popping, so we will get into that in just a second and a little bit of the Texans news we'll get into. First off, apologies for no post-game episode of the podcast for the Jets game. I will be very honest with you. I worked till 1:30 in the morning, got up at 5 after the game on Friday, did a 4-hour radio show, and then I left on vacation for a few days. So didn't get a chance to bang out a post-Jets game podcast. Had they won, I might have been a little more jubilant and done so, but I did not feel like wallowing in that game any longer. I had not had a day off in 28 days. I'd worked Saturdays and Sundays for 4 straight weekends, so I was ready to head out and go to the Golden Nugget, gamble my ass off, drink my ass off, hang out with my wife, watch games, and I did that for 3 days. So I am hopeful that the rest of the internet picked up the slack, or that those of you who listen to Payne and Pendergast got plenty of my thoughts on there as to how that game went. It fucking sucked, okay? There you go. There's my summary of the Jets game. It fucking sucked. It was literally one of the worst times I've had watching a football game. And I've sat through a lot of bad Texans football over the last few years, but that one, considering the expectations for the team, considering the records of the two teams, and considering just how piss poor this offensive line still is at protecting CJ Stroud, that was the least fun I've had watching a Texans game certainly during the D'Amico Ryans era, but probably going back to the second half of the Chiefs playoff game with Bill O'Brien. Like, that was the worst. That was horrible. From the second quarter on in that game was terrible. So it was up there, man. It was just a miserable experience. By midway through the first quarter, you could tell neither team was dialed in. And I was just looking at my colleagues there in the 610 theater room that we were watching it in and just saying, I just want this game to, I want them to get out of here with a win and just get the hell home. So those are my thoughts on the Jets game for anybody that was curious about that. But we've got a mailbag we've got to get into here, and we will do that shortly. A reminder, houmailbag@gmail.com. I'll leave that at the bottom of the screen if you're watching on YouTube. As far as news for the Texans goes, I'm recording this on Tuesday, close to lunchtime here. So we're a few hours away from the trade deadline. It seems like I'm safe from having this episode get obsoleted by a Texans trade. It doesn't sound like we're going to see a trade today, which means we're not going to see a trade until the offseason with the Texans, if that's the case. Without knowing what the prices are on things the Texans need, I'm a little disappointed. I don't feel like this is a perfect team by any means right now. There's some very imperfect parts of this team, and I would assume that with some of the teams that are sellers right now, there's players available. Without knowing what the prices are that are being discussed for these players, it's hard for me to get like a 10 level mad, but I'm just disappointed that if there are no deals, that the Texans are kind of standing pat or just going with the waiver wire or street free agents to improve the team through the balance of the year, because they've got some very attackable parts of this roster for good teams. So I'll be disappointed if that's not the case. Again, I'm recording this right now. It's 11:15-ish on Tuesday. So hopefully this episode gets obsoleted. Nick makes a deal, and then I do an emergency video on my Twitter feed at Sean T. Pendergast to give my opinions on that. We didn't get much from D'Amico yesterday in the way of changes that will be made. We know that change will have been thrust upon them at left guard because Kenyon Green is now out for the season with a left shoulder injury. So we'll see how Jarrett Patterson is doing in concussion protocol. He would seem to be the first choice to replace Kenyon Green, barring a trade. And the two big ones, Nico Collins and Will Anderson Jr. I'm optimistic about each of them. And this may just be the delusional Texan fan in me. But I feel like D'Amico had an answer on Texans All Access on the coach's show about how he handles injuries. And he made it very clear he's a coach that exercises extreme caution with injuries. He errs to the side of caution. So the fact that they put Nico Collins on injured reserve, I always thought was an overly cautious, possibly overly cautious move, just to make sure he gets 4 weeks to get well so he's good to go for the rest of the season. And reportedly, Nico Collins is running and running pretty fast in his workouts. So I doubt he would be doing that if his hamstring were an issue. So I'm optimistic about him. And then Will Anderson, I'm optimistic about because it looked like he was really trying to get back into that game on Thursday night against the Jets. And he got back in for a snap, came back out. And then throughout the second half, he was kind of working the ankle out a little bit, you know, kind of doing some dip moves and things like that, some edge rushing moves. Never came back into the game. So I'm hopeful that that's the extreme caution that D'Amico is talking about that he was using with Will Anderson there. Hey, man, take these 10 days to get the ankle ready. We need you for the Detroit game. We need you more for Detroit than we do for the Jets, was maybe the thought process at the time. As it turns out, they needed him for both probably. But we'll know more Wednesday. It's a big injury report on Wednesday. I say that every week, but this one is particularly big because I think Nico Collins, you could argue, has been their most valuable player offensively when he's been on the field. It's either him or Joe Mixon. And then defensively, Will Anderson Jr. has been their most valuable defensive player on the field. Hopefully you get Aziz Alshire back and Jimmy Ward this week as well. Hopefully the bunch of reinforcements are coming in for this game because the Texans are a 3-point underdog. I've seen it as high as 5 points on Sunday night. I would skew more towards the 5 than the 3 right now if it were me. I just think this Detroit team is hitting on all cylinders, and they're significantly better than the Texans right now. And oh, by the way, they just picked up Za'Darius Smith today at the trade deadline. So they just picked up a very, very good edge rusher. He's not Aiden Hutchinson, but he's pretty damn good. And they've been getting by okay without Aiden Hutchinson out there for the Lions. So this is the best team in football right now coming into NRG Stadium. They're a machine offensively. Just crazy to say with an offense that has Jared Goff as the quarterback, who I don't think is great, but he's been very, very good. He's really been very good the last few years for the Lions, but particularly this year. They've thrown more touchdowns than they have incompletions over a period of time that we're into here. So going to be a tough one. I am not optimistic about the Texans' chances in this game, but maybe we hear and see some things throughout the week that make us think a little bit differently about it. I would like to know more about what the plan is to get the offensive line other than just hope and, oh, we've had some good snaps. You know, everything's fixable. This offensive line is making D'Amico Ryans look a little, I don't know if delusional is the right word. I just don't believe that D'Amico believes everything he's saying right now. And I think he's hoping that this is a talented group because they do have a lot of physical talent in that group that will put it together at some point. I just don't know that I don't like the makeup of this group. I don't like the makeup of the two tackles. I don't, maybe replacing Kenyon with Jarrett Patterson is enough to at least X's and O's wise stem the tide from some of these teams of getting a rush and a push inside and keeping Laremy and others from having to help out for the left guard. You know, maybe there's a synergistic effect of having a good left guard that has an uptick for everybody else because Kenyon isn't dragging everybody down the way he's been all season long. So we'll see what happens. There's plenty of offensive line talk in the mailbag. So rather than me yammering, why don't we get things cracking here with the mailbag. And we'll start with Dave in Round Rock. Let's see. I've kind of grouped these. The frustration with the offense emails are coming in hot and heavy first. Dave in Round Rock, just watched the game, took the dogs out, prepared tomorrow's coffee, and kissed my wife. What the hell did I just see? This is obviously sent in the night of the Jets game. Fucking disaster. I'm glad to hear Clint agree with this line, with the fact that this line is destroying CJ Stroud. I don't even have a question. I'm just so pissed. Dave, that's why I'm here. I'm here for you, man. If you need to send an email, this helps. You took care of all your checklist. Let the dogs out. Watch the game. Prepare tomorrow's coffee is interesting. So you prepare your coffee the night before you're getting up to go to work. It's interesting. And kiss the wife. You always got to kiss the wife. That's all the detail I need, Dave. I don't need to know what else happened with you guys. I don't know how you handle the frustration of the Texans going up to New York and laying an egg with the Jets. So kiss the wife. That's fine. That's code for anything. I don't need to know. But yeah, disaster. And for those wondering, what did Clint say? I don't think Clint is not expressing an overall view that's any different from what you guys are. Like he's just as angry. Who I'm talking about here, post-game co-host of mine. He's just as frustrated with the O-line. I think he's very frustrated schematically with the Texans as well. He thinks they should be kind of spreading things out a little bit more, giving CJ a little more space, a little bit easier to see things. And it's true. I don't know why the Texans are so hell-bent on having, it feels like two-thirds of their formations, everybody's jammed in between the hash marks. It's weird. I'm sure there'll be some Bobby frustration coming here in the mailbag shortly. Ronaldo, the Texans are pretenders, not contenders. O-line sucks. That's the whole email. They do suck right now, Ronaldo. You're right. I don't know what else to tell you. I agree. So, hey, man, I'm here for these emails. If you guys, if you have questions that you think I can answer, by all means, send them in. If it's just therapeutic for you to sit down at your computer or on your phone and type all your frustrations, talk about how much the Texans' offensive line sucks, and then hit send to anybody, I'm happy to be that anybody for you, man. Let me be your anybody. Kyle in Denver. Not a question, just a statement. I'm going to get a question eventually with some of these, right? Not a question, just a statement. Bobby Slowick deserves to be lined up and shot after the 2nd-and-7 fade from Mixon to Stroud. That's a little extreme. Come on, Kyle. I mean, I would say slapped across the face with a glove, but come on. No gun violence here. Now, I agree with you. The 2nd-and-7 fade from Mixon to Stroud was one of the dumbest things I've ever seen. It was a low-percentage play in a game where trips down into the red zone were at a premium. It was a play that required your offensive line to sell run, and they didn't sell shit. They're horrible salespeople. They're the worst kind of salespeople.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated. Where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
They're the salespeople, the offensive line, that forecasts their pipeline to hit their number at the beginning of the month. And then at the end of the month, you're calling them up saying, hey, you're wanting to know where all the deals are, and they're not answering their phone. That's who they are. Shitty salespeople. They didn't sell the run at all in that play. Mixon's throw was whatever. And then you're running a play where you've got your quarterback, like your quarterback who has taken all sorts of hits on the evening, and you're running a play where he may have to go to the ground to get a ball. He may get tackled catching a ball. What are we doing? And it's a low percentage play. That's the thing. You know what was working? Running Joe Mixon in that game. I know it didn't work as well in the second half.
But what the fuck?
Yeah, that was just stupid. So, Kyle, I know that's not a question. I know it's a statement. I am stating to you that I agree with you. Just stupid. All right, let's keep it moving. Chris in the ATL. First, it feels good again to be upset with a Texans team that is 6-3 versus where they were 2 years ago. Let me stop right there. You're absolutely right. We might be a tad spoiled right now with the quick turnaround last year. A tad spoiled. I do wonder this, and I'm going to write this down to ask Seth this question on the show tomorrow. What if Tyler Goodson catches that fourth down pass last year in the Colts game in week 18? And they convert and they go on to score a touchdown. And it's the Colts at 10-7 going to the postseason and the Texans going home for the offseason. That's a huge what if, because you don't get that home game against Cleveland in the playoffs, which I think, as we're learning now, is a blessing and a curse. That game was a blessing in that it was fun. It was a playoff game. Always cool to win a playoff game. Danielle Hunter was at that game, probably had a big effect on him wanting to come to the Texans. It put the Texans in the conversation of fun, frisky, dark horse Super Bowl team. It also amped up the expectations to where if they look like anything but a dark horse Super Bowl team, people are pissed. So, look, I'm glad it went the way it did. It went 10-7 going to the playoffs, fun as hell. Got an extra 2 paydays for doing pregame and postgame in the playoffs. I'm all about the money, and I'm all about the Texans. But if they'd gone 9-8 and missed the playoffs, and they were 6-3 right now playing the way they're playing, would there be nearly as much hand-wringing? Probably so, because C.J. Stroud is getting beat up. And that's a huge thing, regardless of your record. But, Chris, I agree with you. Like, the quick turnaround has amped up the expectations for people, I think. And that's good. It's great to live in this world, as you point out. Chris continues, that being said, it's extremely frustrating to watch the Texans piss away a potential Super Bowl contending season. This is why I am not mad, just really, really disappointed. And I believe accountability starts with the front office and the staff. Who should I be disappointed in more? And he cites Nick Caserio, who built and managed the roster available to the staff, D'Amico Ryans, who manages the staff and game day rosters, and Bobby Slowick, who controls the offensive personnel and the plays. For me right now, I put D'Amico in third. I don't think D'Amico's doing a bad job. I think he's had some moments this year that he'd like to have back, or that I would like for him to like to have back in managing the game. I don't think he's been as good in the game management department as he was last year, and that just means that I disagree with some of his decisions, and I've turned out to be right. I would say Nick Caserio number two, mostly because the offensive line is the issue right now, and he's the one that gave out contract extensions and used draft capital on those offensive linemen. But number one for me is Bobby Slowick. If you're asking me which of these three guys is doing their job the most poorly right now, it's clearly Bobby Slowick. So that's another good – I'm going to use that one, Chris, tomorrow on the show as well. That's a really good one. Who most – sorry I write these down, guys, but I've got to have both shows be good, not just the podcast. That's a really good one. But I would rank it Slowick 1, Nick 2, D'Amico 3. All right. Ben in the South gets in. Texans prove they are definitely not an elite team. The game was gross. Chiefs, Ravens, and Lions are going to boat race them, and there will be an early exit in the playoffs if they can't do better than that. The future is bright, but we may just have an above-average team for this year. I think I've read 6 emails so far, and only one has had a question in it. It's really just you guys. And I'm not saying don't email. I love the emails, and I'm happy to agree or disagree and act like we're in a bar chat here. I just think it's funny how the emails are really just you guys expressing frustration. I think it's cool. I love the engagement and the interaction. I wish it didn't have to be this way. I wish they beat the Jets, and then you guys would have all sorts of questions about like the Lions and maybe beating them this weekend and whatnot. I agree with you. Big future still bright. The biggest thing is they got to stop. My biggest like thing I would pick right now, and I might even pick this over getting into the postseason. Like, you gave me a choice, like get into the postseason or CJ gets protected way better this year and gets his groove back and isn't affected by. That's my big fear, is that whatever effect all these sacks are having on CJ Stroud is something that creates long-term issues with CJ, where he's just not as comfortable in the pocket. I don't think that's going to be the case. He's a tough kid, and I think once he starts getting good protection one of these days, that it'll all feel familiar again. But yeah, like I'm very nervous about the physical harm on CJ, but also the psychological pocket harm that it's being done on CJ Stroud as well. Let's see, TJ in Fort Worth. After this week, should we start to be concerned about the coaching staff? Slowick's inability to adjust from his over-reliance on the high-bunch formations, the defense getting repeatedly beat by opposing offenses, putting their wide receiver one in the slot, the lack of awareness on the fumble touchback. Only luck kept that from being a touchdown. You're talking about the one where Malachi Corley dropped the ball at the goal line and it rolled through the end zone for a touchback. Yeah, like overall, should we start being concerned about the coaching staff? I'm not. I think it's a good coaching staff. I think, you know, I'm very anxious to see how this thing with Slowick plays out. I think it's almost a lock that Slowick won't be back next year, because either the Texans figure this thing out over the next 8 weeks and they get this offense going again and he becomes a head coaching candidate, and I think he would be one of those guys that might not be quite as choosy in taking a head coaching job if that's what he wants to do, because he's kind of probably in some ways stared his head coaching mortality in its face over the first half of this season. Like, he's, I don't think you can consider him a hot coaching candidate right now. He's a huge reason why this offense is so bad. He's a reason, and the offensive line, which rolls up to him, is a reason. So I think either he gets let go or he's Bobby Slowick's future is going to be determined by these next 8 games. And if they're good, then I think he moves on. If they're bad, then I think the Texans move on. So, but I think it's a good, and I don't think Bobby Slowick's a bad coach by any means, but he's had a bad 2 months for sure. So I'm not super concerned about the coaching staff. You know, Jalen Petrie whining. I get what you're saying. Jalen Petrie winding up in the slot on Davante Adams or whatever. That's unfortunate. It doesn't make me want to just completely flush the staff down the toilet. I think they're a good staff that develops players pretty well. And I think D'Amico's the right guy for the job. Joe Q. Here's Joe Q's hypothesis. Juice Scruggs is the problem, in all bold letters, is what he says. There are lots of amateur film analysts on Twitter pulling out cut-ups of Juice failing. Joe says, I'll use some simple logic in Encyclopedia Brown fashion. And then says, I think you might be just old enough to get that reference to make my case. I remember Encyclopedia Brown, but I never read. I think, are they books? Is that what they are? They're like detective books, or the books where you like string together a bunch of facts. I don't know. Like, I'm the age where I should know. I just didn't take interest in them. That's all. You know, there's a lot of things like that fall into my age bracket that I just wasn't into. You know, my kids played Twister when I was a kid. I thought Twister was fucking dumb. Nowadays, like, if, you know, naked Twister with the right set of people, I suppose, you know, that might be a thing. But as far as like how kids played it, you know, like Twister wasn't a thing. I'll come up with that list for the next podcast, maybe. Things that people in my age group used to do. Like, I thought Slinkies were the dumbest fucking things ever. Plus, you get your fingers pinched in them all the time. A Slinky, it's fun for a girl and a boy. All right, continue with Joe Q's email. He's using Encyclopedia Brown to make his case that Juice Scruggs is the problem. Fact one, we are running it much better this year, but pass blocking much worse. That tells me the line is plenty athletic enough, but isn't playing chess very well. Fact two, Tunsil and Titus have very good PFF grades. Are they very good, or are they just okay? Because they're getting paid like they're supposed to be really good. But I get your point. Fact number three, either the QB or the center needs to own the protections. Fact number four, CJ isn't doing it. He's only 24 games into his career, but he's not going anywhere. So then Joe suggests that maybe go pluck Michael Dieter back out of Washington, or Scott Quisenberry's on the practice squad, maybe a center who might have a little more veteran savvy, and then put Juice in the competition at left guard. I don't know. These are one of the things where I trust Seth Payne on. We actually had a pretty extensive conversation about this very thing on the show today. Seth seems to think Juice is okay calling out the protections and doing the job he needs to do at center. Enough to the point where if you start moving things around, it may be more detrimental. Like you may be creating other problems by trying to solve one problem. I like the thought. And if they were to do this, I would be cool with it. Like, I'm cool with anything that I think makes this line better. And I do think that I do think there's a chance that Juice has too much on his plate, for sure, for a young guy, because he's really a rookie when it comes to playing center in the NFL. He played left guard for the portion of the season that he played last year. So I approve of the hypothesis. If they were to determine that this is the route they should go, I would trust them that that's the case. Them being the Texans, the front office, and D'Amico Ryans, I would trust D'Amico if he thought that this would make it better. But I don't think that's happening. Ultimately, for all the left guard and center and offensive line questions we get, let's just boil it down. Who's starting on offensive line when the Texans take the field on Sunday against the Lions? I think it's simple. Left to right. Tunsil, Patterson if he's healthy, Scruggs, Shaq, Titus. I think the next potential iteration would be Patterson has a concussion still, and then they go Tunsil, Kendrick, Scruggs, Mason, Howard, left to right. I think the wild card in this, there's two wild cards. I think the one wild card could be Scruggs to left guard, Jared Patterson back at center, because he did play some center last year. Now, Patterson made his bones as a guard at Notre Dame. He played both, but he was a guard at Notre Dame. I think the other one that's on the table potentially, because everything's on the table, I was told, is Titus Howard back to left guard and Blake Fisher in at right tackle. I don't know how to rank those. The most intriguing one is Titus back to left guard and Blake Fisher at right tackle, because then we start the clock ticking on Blake Fisher being the right tackle full time for this team. That might mean the end of Titus Howard as a Houston Texan next year. So I got to write that down. Combos of O-line. Man, I'm coming up with some topics for tomorrow. Show prep just got a lot easier. You guys rock. So that's kind of, I think those are the possibilities. As of now, like at 3 o'clock today, maybe there's something else. I know they tried out Lael Collins yesterday. Maybe he's in the mix to be a left guard for this team. Who the hell knows? France in the North. France correctly predicted there will be lots of anger with this mailbag. So a little switch up. France, you were correct about that. France says, working with two former players, you're talking about me working with two former players, Steph and Clint, they see the game obviously so different in comparison to us fans. What is one of the aspects that you really appreciate from that perspective? For example, while the team is struggling, what is something that can be insightful and or important for us fans to know or see? Being a fan first, does it still seem unreal that you have such access to the team like Nick in studio and you can pick his brain about things regarding the team, even though he's like Fort Knox when it comes to information? And then he says, I'm pissed about the game still. Ha ha. I'll answer the last part first. It is my favorite part of my job. And I've probably said this on the podcast before, so I'll keep it short. My favorite part of my job is game day. Always has been. I love Monday through Friday with Seth as well. I love it. I just, game day, you always have to have a favorite. My favorite is game day because I love the process of it. I love being part of both the pregame and I love setting up the game for listeners, and I love breaking down the game, getting our opinions out there first, planting the flag in an opinion before anything else, before anybody else gets to on the postgame show. And then watching the game, like sitting in the press box, watching the game, sitting next to Seth, Clint's a few seats down. That's just fun. I mean, there's like 8 of us up there and we all have our own row that we sit in. They stick us down in the right-hand end of the press box. And it's like a frat party. It's like watching it with a bunch of your frat buddies. You know what I mean? Like we're just cutting up and joking around, but we're watching the game pretty intensely. And then the road games we watch up at the studio, which is great. I thought about making that an auction item in a charity to have people come up and watch a Texans game with us. And as we take our notes and get ready and break everything down and just sit, I think there's listeners or fans out there that would pay a little bit just to do that as an experience. And I say that because I'm a fan at the end of the day. I'm not a former player. Watching games with former players is super educational, super educational. And I think, you know, to answer your question, France, I don't know that it's any one thing like that I watch a little more smartly. They just, like on a consistent basis by myself, They see things differently, like in the trenches. The stuff that looks like clutter to average football fans, they see right away, you know, and it's almost like watching the game with somebody that's got answers to the test a little bit. You know, they see things in formations beforehand, you know, tendencies. They're able to retain tendencies throughout the game. Former players are where they're, you know, by the third or fourth quarter, if a defense is showing a certain kind of look or an offense is lining up in a certain kind of formation, they've got a real good grasp as to what may be coming. So that's all it is for me. It's just really cool. And you're right. It's like it's a cool experience, man. And having Nick in studio and stuff like that. Yeah, it's awesome. I've got the best job in the world. It's great. It's great. So I don't know if that answers your question about, like, I don't have specific things that they see, like something that I would be able to pass on and say, hey, look for this. Like, they just see the game differently. And especially Seth, because he played in the trenches, like he's able to watch that aspect of the game a little differently. So it's really fun to sit with those guys and watch the games. It's awesome. Thank you, Fronts in the North. Ray Ochoa says, thank you for all the information you provide to us about the Houston Texans. Here we go. Here come the trade questions. What offensive lineman can we trade for? I would say that I'd be calling Cleveland on the two guards, Betonio and Teller. Brandon Scherff's name is one that's come up, but he's in Jacksonville. I don't think Jacksonville's in the business of helping the Texans. Other than that, it's a bunch of, you know, like I think it's scour depth charts on the teams who are open for sale. And if you are of mind to do it, you can probably duke a day three pick for one of their interior offensive linemen. I think it's that simple. Ray, to be honest with you, I would go listing a bunch of names that might bore the shit out of the listeners here. Those are the big ones for me. Brandon Scherff in Jacksonville and then the two guards in Cleveland. I don't think any of it's happening, but those would be the dare to dream with 3 hours and 15 minutes until the trade deadline. Ryan Lynn says you can make one trade before the deadline, left guard or wide receiver. I need more information than that. Guard is the more urgent need. But I am all about bringing in a veteran, like third receiver, to kind of take up some of the digs slack. You know, Kendrick Bourne, Jacoby Myers; those are guys that have history with D'Amico Ryans and Nick Caserio. Both were with each of them when they were drafted. Kendrick Bourne was in San Francisco. Jacoby Myers was in New England when Nick was there. So I don't have an answer if I can make one. Left guard is the more urgent need for this team, but I need to know what the trades and the names look like before I say like which one, you know, which one. But if I had to pick one blindly, I'd pick left guard. Chuck in Denver, have to say that I trust Nick with the roster. He proved me wrong this offseason. He was calculating and decisive. If you could have him fill one spot, not offensive guard, who would that be? How much would you give up for that person? Okay, and again, this depends on the person, but because we're talking about position, not names. Like the names I just gave you, a wide receiver, I'm not giving up anything more than what Baltimore gave up for Deontay Johnson. Right? It was like Johnson and a six for a five. It was like Johnson and a pick swap. So the wide receiver names are all guys that I'm thinking are day three pick swap types. If the Raiders are willing to move on from Jacoby Myers, if the Patriots are willing to move on from Kendrick Bourne, Darius Slayton with the Giants, I think is another name that's worth looking into if they're of mind to move on and move up a little bit in the draft on day three. We don't know how much these guys are also agitating for trades and looking for trades and trying to get out. Players are doing that more and more. So I think it's a big reason why Deontay Johnson isn't in Carolina anymore. He's kind of a turd. My guess is he was not fun behind the scenes in Carolina. So I think you can tell wide receiver is one for me. I think a veteran running back too. I saw Khalil Herbert go for next to nothing today from the Bears to the Bengals, right? And I know the Bengals have issues at running back. Zach Moss is out with a neck injury. Damian Pierce is injured again. I don't think Dare I don't think he's a good backup running back on a good team. Dare has a purpose. He belongs on the team. Don't get me wrong. If Dare Ogunbowale is your number two running back, I don't think that's a Super Bowl caliber backfield. So I would look into I think you can get a veteran running back super cheap. I would look into that as well. But those would be the areas. Secondary too, I would say, on the defensive side of the ball. Middle screen is in. Middle screen has two questions, and one of which I think I might save for next week. he himself said it is an evergreen question. So I think I'm going to save that for next week just because I'm running out of time. So I'll answer the one that's a little more imminent. In consecutive years, Houston sports franchises drafted players from Atascocita to high in the first round. Do I like this? If you could choose one of them, Bryce Matthews, infielder in the Astros system, made it up to AAA this year, or Kenyon Green to become long-term fringe all-star starters for their respective teams, who would you choose and why? Oh, middle screen, you magnificent bastard. This is a great creative question. If you could pick one of Bryce Matthews or Kenyon Green to become a fringe all-star level starter for their respective teams, who would you choose? I think I would choose Bryce Matthews. Well, I need to know if Bregman's sticking around. Let's assume Bregman's gone. I think I would choose Bryce Matthews if he's going to be a fringe all-star, because that's what Bregman was. Bregman was a fringe all-star. Bregman only made a couple all-star teams. So Bregman was a fringe all-star. I think I'd pick Bryce Matthews, and here's why, is that's a bigger impact than a left guard. Like, I think you can find – the Texans have done an awesome job. I think you can find an average left guard to plug in there, and you should be fine along the offensive line. And the Texans have enough other talent on the roster to where an average – left guard, just, you know, blindly, whatever left guard is behind door number two is going to be good enough. Whereas Bryce Matthews, presumably you plug him in at third base because then you got Pena and Altuve as your double play combination over the next few years. And man, that might be something that helps keep the window open a little bit. You know, if you got a young all-star, near all-star caliber player in the infield for the next few years, along with Yiner Diaz, Jeremy Pena, Jose Altuve, Yordan Alvarez, the young pitchers that they have, and then whatever moves they can make once they get all the shit money off the books of Abreu and Montero and all the Tommy John guys and everything else. So I think I would go with that. The only thing that has me rethinking Kenyon Green is that is a draft pick from the Deshaun Watson trade. And as good as the Texans have been since D'Amico Ryans has gotten here, to where I shouldn't be petty about things like this anymore, I am still petty about that trade, and I want every pick to work out. I know it's not going to happen, but I at least want to entertain the possibility of it happening. And as of right now, the biggest failure is Kenyon Green. And I know he wasn't taken with the exact pick that they got from the Browns, but he got taken with the pick that was in the trade. You know, they moved two picks back. That's a Deshaun Watson pick. So that's the only thing that has me saying Kenyon Green is pettiness. But the practical side of me says Bryce Matthews. Middle screen, you know where to reach me, okay? Tell me what your answer would have been for that. And I'm curious what everybody else's answer would be. All right. Wow, a few more. Holy crap, a lot more. I thought we only had a couple more questions left. Let's see. Nicholas says, first time emailer, love the show. Wanted to nominate Bozeman from the Chargers for the Circle of Swarm. For the way he defended Herbert in their game against the Browns. Yeah, I didn't see what you're talking about. I'm assuming Bozeman is an offensive lineman who actually came to the defense of his quarterback, which is good for him. He's in the Chargers circle of swarm. Nicholas says, thanks for keeping me sane after the losses. I know we shouldn't complain, but I think healthy self-reflection after a loss is what it takes to be a champion. One last thing, I'm trying not to give a free pass to Titus Howard, but I'm surprised no one's mentioned that he's coming back from a patellar rupture. Statistically, coming back from that is harder than even an ACL. Not surprised he's struggling. Hopefully next year he will have recovered. That's a good point. Like, nobody's brought up the fact that Titus is coming back from knee surgery. I might have to mention that to Seth and see if Seth tells me to go die if I bring that up. Nicholas, thank you and appreciate it. Welcome to the mailbag. Let's see. Thursday night's game is Ryan in the Shug. Thursday night's game was pretty disappointing. Schedule doesn't get any easier, and I think that game took the wind out of our sails as fans. Give us listeners a couple reasons to be nervous and a couple reasons to be hopeful. Okay. I can do that. I would say that after this Lions game, the schedule does get a little bit easier between now and the bye week. I mean, there's a chance that you are going to be facing, between now and the Chiefs game, four teams that will have cashed in the chips on their season. Cowboys are a mess with no Dak Prescott with the hamstring injury. Titans suck. And I'm just going in order of their schedule. Jags suck. you have a bye week to then get ready for the Dolphins, who by then might be out of the race. By then, Tua might be eating through a straw. So who knows? He's fine right now. But I would say that would be one reason for hope, is that I think even if you lose to the Lions, I think there's a really good chance that you could be 10-4 going into those last couple, those games between the Chiefs, you know, against the Chiefs and the Ravens. And then you've got one more Titans game with 10 days to rest for it. So I think the schedule, even though it's got that weird 3-game and 11-day stretch, I think there is schedule coming up here between now and the bye week that is very conducive to getting things back on track. And I would say you're going to start to get some guys back here. You know, Nico's going to come back. Will Anderson doesn't. I don't think his ankle injury is super serious. I don't know. Maybe that's more of a reason to be nervous, is we don't know the status of Will Anderson. I think the biggest reason to be nervous is just so the reasons to be hopeful. I think the schedule is not as hard as it looks. Post Lions, I think you've got a period between the Lions and the Chiefs where you maybe can and should go 4-0 in those games. So I think that's a reason for hope. I think that if I'm looking for another reason for hope, I mean, there's obviously plenty of talent on the roster. I think getting Nico back is a big one for me as a reason for hope. As far as reasons to be nervous, I'm nervous about the Will Anderson ankle injury. And then I am nervous about the 3 games in 11 days right there, right around the holidays with all the travel. The saving grace is 2 of the 3 games are at home. So the only traveling you're doing is, you know, that Friday you're going to Kansas City, play a game, come home. It's the Ravens who have to come here on Christmas. So, and I would say maybe another reason to be nervous is if they don't make any moves at the trade deadline, that there's clearly something they see in this team that maybe I don't see in this team. Like, I don't know that I'm feeling Super Bowl with this team right now. And I don't know that there's a move available where they go from, hey, I'm skittish, to, oh yeah, that's it, they're winning the Super Bowl. But maybe the lack of activity, if indeed there winds up being a lack of activity. I hope that helps, Ryan and the Shug. I hope that helps. I would love to list Christian Harris coming back as a reason to be hopeful, but I don't even know if he still lives in Houston. I don't even know if he plays football anymore. All right. Edmund in full shear. I know you are probably up to your eyeballs on offensive line questions. So, Edmund, you don't know the half of it. Here's one from a different angle. Should Nick and D'Amico look at short-term consulting contracts to Mike Munchak and Bruce Matthews to review the All-22 and make recommendations, or actually come in and work with the O-line? They've both been coaches, both in the Hall of Fame. I think it'd be a great idea. I don't think there's anything bad that can happen from Mike Munchak and Bruce Matthews looking at your film. My question is, do they want to? Do they have any desire to? I think Mike Munchak would be either of them, but Mike Munchak we know is a proven high-level NFL offensive line coach. That would be a home run. If you brought in Mike Munchak to coach your offensive line, like in a dream world, like if I was a genie and I had like, or if I, not if I was a genie, if I found a lamp that had a genie inside of it, and she was hot. No, I'm not going to go there. So if they gave me wishes as to, like, you could swap out non-player, non-head coach, just coaching staff and coordinators, you get two wishes. I would say Mike Munchak, offensive line coach, C.S. Strouser, and I would say Gary Kubiak, offensive coordinator. And off to the races we go. How fucking cool would that be? But I think the consultant thing, I think it makes sense. Why not? Short-term consulting contracts. Let's go. Last one, Dennis from Budapest. We are finishing up with somebody in Budapest. That's in Hungary, people. Dennis says, my dream of 15 years will be realized after I took a month's salary and booked my flight tickets and an Airbnb in Montrose to celebrate Red Jersey Launch Day. Dennis is going to be at the game, people. Dennis is coming in from Budapest to go to the game. He says, first thing he asks is the Airbnb. He says, I have an Airbnb in Montrose. Is that okay? Yeah. Montrose is one of the nicer, safer, cooler neighborhoods in Houston. Montrose, it's a lot of tattoo parlors. And, you know, like Montrose, it is a largely gay population in Montrose. I don't say that judgmentally or as a negative. I'm merely pointing that out as somebody who's he's coming to Houston. I'm kind of giving you the thumbnail sketch of Montrose. We border Montrose, and my wife and I eat and walk through and hang out in Montrose all the time. We love Montrose. So, yes, you did good. So, you're actually, Dennis, you're staying fairly close to me. You might have to come meet me at Lizards for a beer, Dennis, just so you know. Do you have any advice for us? My cousin and his wife, who are spending the semester in North Texas, will be joining him for the trip. Okay, so there's three of you. Any recommendation in terms of food, evening program, etc.? We'll be in town. The 8th through the 11th. Okay, Friday through Monday. It would be nice to grab a beer with you and all those Texans enthusiasts I'm following from afar. Counting down the days, Dennis from Budapest. Okay, so a couple things. Dennis, I had Dennis send me his social media. So if any of you are listening and you know of tailgates, if you'd like to reach out to Dennis, then invite him to a tailgate or two, or go have beers, or let him know where the diehard Texan fans are hanging out. On X/Twitter, he is at SEDE7. And on Instagram, he is at KEPZELDEL. KEPZELDEL. All right, KEPZELDEL. If any of you want to reach out to Dennis, who's coming in from Budapest with his cousin and his cousin's wife, and invite him to any Texan fan activities or tailgates, feel free to do so. I told him I would put that out there. As far as what I would say, as far as places to go eat and things to do, look, it depends on what kind of food you want. You know, like, you know, Italian food. I barely leave my neighborhood because I have so many good places to eat. You know, I've got 5 sushi places within walking distance of me here. I like Aka Sushi House. Is very, very good. That's the one that Amy and I go to a lot on West Alabama. Kata Rabata, if you want to go upscale sushi, it's right down the street from us on Kirby. We go to the original Carrabba's a lot for our Italian food. That's a good place to go if you're in from out of town, because you'll probably see some people there that are, you know, you'll usually see one or two Houston famous people there. The quarterbacks go there sometimes to eat their Friday dinner. That's happened a couple times when we've been there. CJ and Case and Davis are there. So at the original Carrabba's. Barbecue, there's a million barbecue places you'll get plenty of recommendations on barbecue. As far as things to do nightlife wise, the big thing Amy and I like to do is Music Box Theater. I've said that on this podcast before. Music Box Theater out in City Center, used to be 2 blocks from where we live, and they moved out to City Center. They listen to this podcast, and I still haven't forgiven you guys for that, but we still go all the time. Music Box Theater is great. It's a 5-person cast where they sing. They have a different genre of music. Every 6 weeks or so, they change the show, or every couple months. They're in Motown right now, so it's a Motown show. And the 5 of them sing a bunch of Motown covers with some comedy weaved into it. The show's about an hour and a half. They serve alcohol there. It's like $50 a ticket for the good tickets. It's very affordable. It's very unique. It's rated really high on TripAdvisor for things to do in Houston. That's the one thing I would tell you, is you're going to find a ton of food recommendations. You will not have a hard time finding good food in Houston. I promise you that. But if you're looking for something to do, that's the one thing. Like, whenever we have people come in from out of town, we always do that. We have never had a bad time there. I always am happy when I go there. So Music Box Theater, I believe it's themusicboxtheater.com on the web. And don't get it confused, because there's one in Chicago as well. Make sure it's the Houston one you're looking up. But that was pretty cool. And then this new Meow Wolf thing that they have over off of Washington. No, it's not off of Washington. It's across from St. Arnold's. St. Arnold's Brewery, a good hang as well, but it's across from St. Arnold's, across the street. It's this weird kind of kitschy, like, art, music, experiential sort of thing that has a speakeasy inside of it that's a whole lot of fun. So that's a pretty cool, unique kind of thing as well. It's called Meow Wolf. So those would be 2 things. I mean, you got the game on Sunday, so you're going to want to kind of, you know, keep it between the lines. But the Music Box Theater is open Friday and Saturday. So, and it's, the show started at 7:30. I'm telling you, that is a thumbs up. You're going to have a good time at that one if you decide to do it. Let me know, Dennis, and get in touch with me and let me know if you want to grab a beer. If I can make it work, I'll make it work, man. I mean, those of you who know me know I'm always up for a beer. All right. So there you go. There is your mailbag. That was a whole lot of fun. Another episode coming later this week. We'll preview the Lions game. That'll drop on Friday morning. And then we'll have reaction. I promise to have a post Lions game podcast on Monday. I'll probably end up doing it after my show on Monday after Payne and Pendergast, but we're done at 8 a.m. on Monday, so you'll probably have it by Monday late morning to give you my reactions to that, if indeed you missed the Monday Payne and Pendergast show. So that was a long mailbag. Enjoyed doing it. Appreciate all of you sending in your emails. Appreciate Anthony Irwin for producing the podcast and all of you for listening and sharing with a friend. A reminder to subscribe, rate, and review the Utopia Football Podcast. Until later this week, have a great weekend.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.